Okay, most people have got their spot now. So for this evening's talk, another request, I get heaps and heaps of requests to give talks, and this evening's request was, can you please talk a little bit about the Buddhist idea of fate, destiny, or free will? Now, please don't head for the doors. This is not going to be an intellectual talk. It's going to be practical, a little bit of interesting stuff, but mostly keep it down to earth how this would relate to your lives. And so first of all, destiny and fate. You know, so many people think that, my partner, he's out there somewhere. It's written in the stars. It's meant to be. And anyone who feels like that, you're really stupid. Nothing is fated, nothing is meant to be. You make it be. You create your fate. It's not all planned out for you beforehand, like some script in a movie. Life, as you all know, is totally ad lib. You make it up as you go along, just like my talks. You know, quite frankly, there's no way that I could ever have imagined ending up, you know, in a place like this when I was a young monk. It's absolutely ridiculous. No one could have predicted this. In fact, often when people do make predictions, because sometimes you do see fortune tellers, sometimes you do see people who do horoscopes. And I can never forget that it was one occasion at monastery down in Subda, must be about 10 years ago, roughly. It was my birthday. And you know, I've got a lot of people who love to support you, and they think, what can we get a monk for his birthday? You know, if you think it's hard enough, you know, shopping for your loved ones, a monk really challenges you. Because we don't have anything. We don't want anything. Now, what can you get a monk for his birthday? So, this fellow was very smart. He said, I will get a professional astrologer to read or find out Ajahn Brahm's horoscope. So he knew my birthday, found out roughly when I was born, what time of the day. Without my knowledge, without asking any permission, he went to these top astrologers and to get my horoscope for that year. And on my birthday, he came to Bodhinyana Monastery and he said, Ajahn Brahm, for your birthday, I've paid a lot of money to get a horoscope done for you. Can I please read it? I said, okay, fair enough. And so he started off. He said, Ajahn Brahm Mwangso said, for anybody born at this time on that day, 7th of August 1951, this year will be a very good year for romance. He never got further than that because the whole hall, including all the monks, burst out laughing. I'm a monk! And it was wrong. I'm still a monk. 10 years later, it wasn't a very good year for romance. What are you talking about? So if that doesn't prove the horoscopes don't work, I don't know what will. But a lot of times people pay a lot of money for that sort of stuff. And especially sometimes, then people come and ask me that, you know. They think, Buddhist monks, deep meditators, surely you can see the future. Come on, Ajahn Brahm. And you know, sometimes monks can do amazing things. Like, you know that story. It's in one of the books about when we had our 30th anniversary of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia over Supreme Court Gardens, and there was supposed to be a storm that night. I mean, really big storm, like a major storm, not one of these ordinary storms we have all the time here. Biggest storm ever to come to Perth. Right, it was supposed to hit exactly the time we were going to have our ceremony. And we had, remember, I'll go quickly this because many of you heard it before. Premier Jeff Gallop, he was the Premier, we invited him. He was going to come. Three times his office called me. Ajahn Brahm, there's a big storm coming, you can't continue. Are you cancelling? And three times I said, no, we are not cancelling. One of our members, he's deceased now, he said, I was a sailor all my life in the merchant seaman. I know these things. the barometer is falling, the barometric pressure is going down, it's going to be a big storm, I know these things, you have to cancel. No. One of my own monks, he took me aside and said, Ajahn Brahm, look, we really love you, we respect you, but you're making an idiot of yourself. Please, cancel. No. And those of you who were there, it was like a miracle. Just about half an hour before we started the ceremony, the rain stopped. We did our ceremony, full moon day, Waisak, 19, I don't know when it was, 2000 or whatever, and it stopped. It was a miracle. And then after we finished, rain came down, Supreme Court gardens flooded, 2 inches of water, those of you who were there, hasn't done that for years. Freeway flooded after the big storm, but we stopped it. And the following day, there was a firm here, I don't mind mentioning this, Reese Hire, they do a lot of party hire stuff, and the CEO sent an email and said, who is this Ajahn Brahm? We don't know who he is, but can you please ask him who's going to win the horse racing today? I've still got that email somewhere. And if they think that monks, you know, we've got the power to actually to tell people's fortunes. So this was happened to, you know, my master Ajahn Chah. Someone came up to him once and said, can you please read the lines on my hand? Tell me my fortune. I just said, look, Buddhist monks, we don't do that. We don't believe in fate and destiny. He said, I know you're saying that, but it's not true. Read the lines on my palm. He said, no, we can't. And then he'd had this layperson, was very, very smart. He thought he could outwit a monk. Don't ever try that. He said, you just gave a talk last week on gratitude. On how important that is that someone helps you, you have to have gratitude towards them. And this episode, I've been feeding you for years. I've been going to your temple, giving donations, driving you around. This is the first time I ask for anything and you say no. Where's the gratitude in that? It's a really good argument. So Ajahn says, okay, I will read the lines on your hand. And this is the one and only time this great master in Thailand ever read somebody's fortune. And he was so excited because this was a great master. My teacher's got many disciples all over the world. Great, wise person. And so Ajahn Chah got his hand and with his finger started drawing the lines. And every now and again he would stop and go, that's interesting. And so I'd go, And this guy was getting more and more excited. He was really being wound up. And Ajahn Chah took forever to finish. And when he finally did finish, this guy was so excited. He was going to get his fortune predicted by a monk he knew had powers and who could not lie, would not lie. Whatever that monk said would have to be true. And so Ajahn Chah, when he finished, he looked the guy in the eye and said, sir, yes. Your fortune, yeah, get on with it. Your future, sir. And I won't lie to you, whatever I say will work. Yeah, I know that, come on. Your future, sir, is uncertain. And he wasn't wrong. Now that is from a great monk. Because the future is uncertain. It's not decreed in the stars. It's not fated. You cannot just get your tea leaves and predict things. It is totally uncertain, which is one of the reasons why in Buddhism we don't do such things as predicting lottery numbers or going to casinos and telling you what number to bet on. That is not part of Buddhism at all. In fact, if you try that, you'd usually end up getting it all wrong and losing a lot of money. Like that story, you see, it gave me permission to do old stories about that person here in Perth many years ago. He had a dream, and his dream was of these five angel coming up to him in his dream. And every angel had a big pot of gold, actually had five pots of gold each. And the angel, they lined up and gave this guy five big pots of gold, gold coins, worth a fortune. Alright, when he put down the 25th pot of gold, that's when he woke up. And of course, you know, when you have a dream like that, you look around your room because you're half asleep and say, where's the gold? He couldn't see the gold anywhere, no angels either was. He realized it's just a dream. Sometimes we have dreams like that. But when he went down, you know, got himself showered and dressed, went down for breakfast, he found his wife that morning had made him 5 boiled eggs and 5 pieces of toast. And when he looked at the newspaper, it was the 5th of May. The 5th day of the 5th month. 5 eggs, 5 pieces of toast. This was strange. So he looked into the back of the newspaper where they had the racing. You know there's a race course, Ascot, named after the big one over in England. A-S-C-O-T. 5 letters. So he looked in the race number 5 that afternoon. And he couldn't believe his eyes. Race number 5, horse number 5, was called 5 Angels. 5 Angels. He just dreamt of 5 Angels, giving him big pots of gold. And he just couldn't believe his luck. So you only get these premonitions maybe once in a lifetime, if at all. So what he did, he took the afternoon off work. He never told his wife. And when I tell this story, because sometimes girls don't understand these things. Actually, they did. And he had to keep the lucky number 5. No, it's the 5th of May, 5 eggs, 5 pieces of toast, 5 angels, horse number 5, race number 5. He took $5,000 out of the bank. He went to the racetrack, Ascot. He picked the 5th window in line with the bookkeepers. And he put $5,000 to win, horse number 5, race number 5, 5 angels. He knew the lucky number 5 could not be wrong. And it wasn't wrong. His horse came in 5th. So the moral of that story is you cannot predict horse races. You cannot predict the roulette wheel. You can't predict anything, okay? It is not destiny. It is not fate in this world. And that's a wonderful thing. If it was destiny, it means just you would not know. You couldn't change it. Sometimes people think, oh, I'm fated to be unlucky. I'm fated to be ill. I'm fated. And even, please excuse me, some of the doctors as well. And they tell you that you're fated to die. Your sickness is terminal. Unfortunately, I've seen too many people who've had terminal cancer still alive today. Be careful there. Even the doctors, they cannot predict. It's not fated. It is not absolute. And this is really important. It means you have a chance. Everybody does have that chance. You can turn it around. And some of the stories I have seen are just amazing. There's a guy who comes once a year over to Bodhinyana Monastery to see me because he had stage 4 lung cancer. And it just went. Disappeared. And it's supposed to be terminal, but it never happened. There was one of my favorite monks. You know, when I first went to Thailand, he had terminal cancer. He said, oh, waste of time dying in a hospital. I might as well go back to my monastery to die. And about 25 years later, he died. Well, it was terminal, but, you know, terminal looked up 25 years before he passed away. So sometimes you really don't know. There's no such thing as fate. And that is really important for us to understand if ever we do have some of these diseases. Because if you think it's fated, it's written in the stars, I have to die. Of course, then you will die. But when you realize that, no, this life is totally open. You don't know what's going to happen next. It also gives you the opportunity to interfere with so-called fate, to make your future, rather than being a victim of the future. And sometimes people are like that with their past as well. I said in a meditation, being a prisoner of your past. Now, because bad things happened to you in the past, you think you're fated to have those bad things happen to you forever. I mean, if you think like that, they do happen. If you believe in fate, you actually make it happen. There's no such thing as that. Just because you've had a difficult time in the past, it doesn't mean you're going to have a difficult time in the future. The great thing about this is you can turn it around. So people say, well, what about karma? Again, karma is what you're doing right now. It's not what you did in the past. That was karma in the past. It gives you the ingredients of the present, but it's amazing what you can do with what you've got. Even with, you know, small things. I remember reading, somebody shows every now and again his inspirational videos. And there was, I think in Venezuela, they formed an orchestra, this very poor village, out of rubbish they got from the tip. And it's amazing, you know, little wind instruments just made out of pieces of plastic tubing. And just they managed to find some string or some wires somewhere. They made a guitar. And it was like the rubbish dump orchestra. And they were really good. And for me, what that meant was, you know, just what you have, it's amazing what you can do. Just even with, you know, some of the worst ingredients. It showed me that you're not fated, you know, because you can't afford proper instruments, especially to play music. It's just how you put together what you've got. And that's such an important thing for people in this world who feel that life is treating them very badly. You're having a difficult time in life. You may not be the most beautiful, not most rich, not the most talented. But what are you doing with what you've got? And you find it's amazing what you could do. And I mentioned sometimes that, I usually do this when I do the stories about death, that I think I mentioned last week when as a young man I went to go and see Rod Stewart, and there's only six people turned up. And I remember that time, you know, in London, you know, and I actually happened to hear, I think it was a funeral somewhere, hear Rod Stewart singing today. He's got a terrible voice, all croaky. He used to have a good voice when he was young, but it's amazing what he can do with what he's got. And turn that into a popular voice. He's a very popular singer now. But it's all croaky and stuff. I could do better than that. Maybe I should change my job. But what he does with what he's got, that's the amazing thing. That's why he's still quite famous. So this is, you're not fated, okay? You've got the opportunities. You can always do something with what you've got. And that actually starts getting us back into this, the opposite. People say, well, it's not fated, it's not conditioned, it's not your karma, which is what people think is another form of fate. And, you know, is there such a thing as free will? And again, that is, you know, those two alternatives, it's either fate or it's free will, both are wrong. Life is not like that. It's not total free will. Because all of your choices you make, I always thought my will was free. One of the first times I got challenged, when I was about 18, I bought myself my first pair of green velvet trousers. I was making a statement. I was saying I was different. I was, you know, cocking a snook at authority. You know, everyone else had dark trousers. But I have my green velvet trousers, and I thought, I'm different. And then I went to this big pop festival, the Isle of Wight Festival, where I saw about another 2,000 people with green velvet trousers. Oh, that was such a downer. I wasn't different after all. And that made me start to think, you know, did I really choose those trousers, or was I just conditioned by my generation? Now, really, was it free will, or was it something else? And a lot of times, you know, we really think it's free will, but it's not. You know, it is. This was a bit of science. There was this great experiment done by Professor Libet. It's a classical experiment. He wanted to find out that which you recognize as your will, whether that is what starts, you know, actions of body or speech. He just asked his experimenters just to open their fists at random whenever they wanted to. With the other finger, when they realized they were wanting to open their fist, they pressed the button. So the decision, the choice, the will to do something simple like open your fist, when it became aware of that decision, they pressed the button, and then they actually did it. And this guy was a great experimenter, allowing for reaction times and things. Now, he proved conclusively, when you become aware When you are aware of the will to actually to move something, it's already happened. It's about, I think, half a second. They've got something called the readiness potential in the brain. The brain turns on, half a second later, you become aware of the thing which you assume to be your will. And then you actually act another half a second later. So what you think is choice, what you recognize as choice, what you assume to be you making a choice, by the time you're aware of that, it's already happening. That which you think is your will is not what starts the whole process. And that was actually an amazing thing to understand, that we are deluded to think that we're in control of this world, which is one of the reasons why, you know, we have things like advertising. Advertising. They say every dollar spent on advertising, you get $3 back again. And I, every now and again, you go past the TV, like in the airport. Some of these advertisements are so stupid. You know, pretty much the same as when I was, you know, a young man 40 years ago. Which washing powder washes whitest? Toothpaste, which gives you the ring of confidence, so all the girls like you. Or like the famous one which I got sucked into when I was, of all places, at Cambridge University. Okay, I'm supposed to be intelligent. I'm not, I'm stupid. Because this was for St. Bruno Tobacco advertising. I always remember this one. Because the advert was on the TV. That when you, the aroma, this was before we knew that sort of, you know, tobacco causes cancer. The aroma of St. Bruno tobacco was irresistible to the opposite sex. And it was a crazy advertisement. This ordinary looking guy, you know, not particularly big or strong or handsome, this ordinary looking middle-aged guy was walking down the street. And he took out a pipe and put this St. Bruno tobacco in and lit it. And as soon as he lit it, he went past this like newsagent shop. And, you know, actually, real newsagents, you don't get these drop-dead gorgeous models working in it, but there was one in this street. Absolutely gorgeous. And as soon as she smelled the aroma, she was totally enchanted. She jumped over the counter, following this guy, willing to do his every command. Then he went past another shop, this gorgeous redhead. And then another shop. After about 1 minute, had this whole line of beautiful women following him. St. Bruno tobacco. Irresistible. Now, who would believe that? You know, who would actually take it seriously? Who would actually go out the next day and buy a pipe and some St. Bruno tobacco? I did. And I lit it, walked down the street, expecting all these beautiful women to jump over the counter and follow me. The only thing which followed me was a dog. But I felt so stupid afterwards. How could an intelligent guy, supposed to be an intelligent guy, get sucked in like that? But you do as well. It's total conditioning. And that's why you start to really wondering about the will. But this guy Libby, he did some more experiments. And the other experiments he did was to show, yes, you know, once you're aware of the will, the whole process has actually started. It's not free will. That is conditioned. But he said after they become aware of the process, you have another 0.3 seconds to stop, to restrain, to decide not to. He said that, you know, is, you can interfere. And what he was actually saying, and this was a scientist, the psychologist, he said, if you're going to be accurate to the evidence, there is no such thing as free will. That is totally conditioned. There is free won't. Not free will, but free won't. You can stop things. You can restrain. And that is a very important thing to understand in psychology, in Buddhism, in counseling, because we do have all of these forces in us, our addictions, our idiosyncrasies. You know, some people into sex, some people into drugs, some people into just, you know, watching movie after movie, some people into buying stuff on the credit card. We have all these addictions. By the time we're aware of, wanting to buy something, it's already happening. And it's not your fault, it's conditioned. But where you do have the power to intervene is to say, no, the free won't. And that is a wonderful thing to know. And that's one of the reasons why we have this big movement in our modern world of mindfulness, where we become aware of these things going on in our head. And realize that, there's these forces, these addictions, these things which cause us a lot of problem, overspending, guys seeing other beautiful women and just, instead of staying with their wife, wanting to go out with them and causing a lot of adultery and a lot of breakups in marriages. Things like your bad speech, you really get angry at somebody. It may be the person you really love and care for, but you can't stop yourself. You think that thought comes up, to get angry at them. But this guy, Libet, was actually showing, those emotions aren't free. You can't really control those emotions. They come up. But you can always say no. That is where you have a sense of control in this world. The ability to let it go, to say no. And that is a very, very powerful insight to have. You can actually, in that sense, control your future, control your world, by learning how to restrain, to say, no, I'm not going to do this. Now, where that actually comes from, obviously, is first of all, knowing you have that ability. Say, all these angry thoughts which we have, even depressive thoughts, all these other sort of ideas which can come up in our mind. When we become aware of them, we can actually turn it off. We can say no. Just like the movie. And I'm going to go over this one again. I said it last week. When you get sucked into the movie, when you get sucked into the movie, when you cry, when you get sort of excited, your heartbeat goes up when something's happening, Batman is about to get done in by the Joker or whatever it is. You believe it's real and you get excited, or the football match where you sort of shout out, offside or whatever. That means you're getting sucked into it. And you can see people actually getting sucked into the movies and getting sort of shouting at the TV set. And I kept on saying last week, doesn't matter how loud you shout in Perth, the Manchester United Liverpool match, it's in England, they cannot hear you over there. And it's probably a replay anyway, it's already happened. You can't interfere. But I always notice, why do people actually get sucked in like that? And they really actually, we think we're right inside of it. And when you're right inside of it, you can't turn it off. And this is actually where that degree of mindfulness, that little bit of separation, your thoughts, your anger, your depression, your addictions, to drugs or alcohol, whatever it is, if you can just give that little bit of separation so you're not sucked into it, you'll find you can actually turn it off. That gives you the ability to say no. And that is where we can control the future. It is free won't. And a great thing happens there is when you start saying no to this thing called will, then you actually find you have real freedom. Free won't. Because now I've been meditating, I've been doing this for such a long time. I look at free will, it is an oxymoron. That's when you have two words put together which mean the total opposite of one another. Freedom is not will. Will is being in a prison. Anyone who's had an addiction, who has a problem, say with anger or with negativity, you're not free. That is always making you do things. Always making you take up that cigarette, making you take up that glass of alcohol, making you get angry, making you always look at the wrong side of life and getting negative and getting depressed. Now, I think you know what I'm talking about. It's not freedom at all. That will is actually controlling you. And sometimes people say they can't stop it. They're kleptomaniacs. They have to go and pinch something. Other people, they have to go and buy something. Other people, they have to eat. They can't say no to that. And you're not free at all. Real freedom is where you can say, no, I don't want it. Well, I want it, but I'm not going to have it. That ability to say no, that is where the freedom is. But the will, that causes you problems and difficulties. But going back to you know, fate, if it's not free will, you can say no to, how does this whole universe actually work? And yeah, on a local level you can see that every choice you make, you know, has an effect, and you know, you can actually see that. But when it gets to the big picture, you know, it just gets so complicated. Yeah, you can see how things work, conditionality, but it gets so complicated you can't predict anything. That is just, you know, what we know about the weather. We can just know just the way the wind moves, but we can't predict it. It's the old chaos theory that a butterfly flaps its wings over Beijing and it causes a storm, a cyclone over the north of Western Australia. The things are so finely balanced, we can't predict anything. And it reminds me of that story which I wanted to introduce. I was going to introduce it earlier, that's why I'm just going off on a bit of a tangent. About this monastery up in the north of India. Up in the mountains. Have you ever been up in the mountains? They're not just Tibetan monasteries, there's Theravada monasteries up there as well. And there's this very famous Theravada monastery up in the north of India in the province of Ladakh. And the old abbot, who was very wise and very spiritually gifted, and people thought he had psychic powers and the whole works, he passed away. They elected a new abbot because he was a good meditator. You know, just like we almost elected a new abbot last week in Canberra. And I got a bit concerned when the monk says, oh, they can have a spill about the new abbot. I said, are you kicking me out? I said, no, it's in Canberra, not in Bodhinyana Monastery. And as soon as I got the new abbot, you know, he's getting on to, you know, the autumn, coming on to winter, they asked what they used to ask the old abbot. He said, you know, this year, is it going to be a very cold winter or is it going to be a mild winter? Because if it was a cold winter, they'd have to get lots of fuel to collect to keep the monastery warm. Because, you know, there's no electricity up in those remote areas. And so the abbot said, let me meditate on this and I'll tell you tomorrow morning. And the poor young monk, you know, an abbot, you know, he's actually only bluffing because his meditation wasn't that good. So he said, I'm going to answer my monks the following morning. You know, they expect me to meditate and be able to predict the weather for the winter time. You can't predict the weather. But anyway, what he did, you know, he called up, you know, the local meteorological office. Get the weather forecast without letting anybody know. And so, you know, he got through to somebody and said, I want the boss, the professor. So he got the professor of meteorology, and not telling, you know, it was a monk asking, he said, oh, what's the forecast for the winter? And the professor, well, no one really knows, but, you know, we think it's probably going to be a bit cold. Thank you. So the following morning, he talked to his monks, he said, because of the power of my meditation, I predict that this year will be a cold winter. And all the monks thought, wow, we better collect lots of wood. So they went collecting lots and lots of wood. And after a week they got a lot of wood. And then they asked, you know, is this enough? And the abbot thought, oh, I better not sort of make a mistake and ruin my reputation. He said, I'll meditate on it tonight. And of course that night he went on the phone and all the monks couldn't see him. Rang up the professor again and said, no, the professor didn't know who was calling. And said, the weather forecast for the winter, how's it going? And the professor said, actually the signs are, it's going to be a very cold winter. You know, the signs have got worse. So thank you very much. And the following morning he said, because of my meditation, I predict that this winter will be very cold. So you better get some more wood. So all the monks were really going all over the place, collecting wood here, collecting wood there. And after 1 week, a huge amount of wood they collected. And they said, is this enough? So the monk said, okay, I'll meditate again tonight and tell you in the morning. Rang out the professor again. I said, is it going to be a really cold winter? And the professor said, actually, I recognize your voice. You asked before, it's going to be an extremely cold winter. Really? Yes, extremely cold. That's what the signs are saying. So the following morning, he told all the monks, get out there again. Get every scrap of timber you can get, any boxwood, any old wood. It's going to be an extremely cold winter. And after another week, the whole monastery is full of wood. Can hardly move in it. And he thought, maybe I've gone over the top. So he called up the professor again. And he said,
I'm absolutely sure it's going to be an extremely cold winter. The professor said, this is going to be one of the worst winters ever in this part of the world. And that's when the monk said, how do you know? And the professor said, because those monks in the monastery have been collecting money by my mother's business.
Now that is how, when I first heard that, they said, that is how Wall Street works. That is how medicine works. That is, we always believe some experts, and they just believe somebody else, but no one really knows. That's one of the wonderful things. As for the future, you don't really know. But you can actually influence it. And the best way of influencing it is actually just to learn how to restrain and to say no sometimes. And the wonderful thing happens. That's why when you're meditating, you just say let go. Because when you're letting go and meditating, you're actually strengthening both your mindfulness to see how your mind works and also strengthening that ability to say no to thoughts, to say no to these wills which want you to make you do something which you regret afterwards. And of course, you all know what happens to people who are totally out of control, got no restraint at all, no understanding of how their mind works and no ability to actually to stop it when it's going to hurt them and harm them. And that is what this Professor Libet actually found out. All those inclinations which you have, you know, for guys, you see a beautiful woman, you know, to go and look at her, you know, that is a sort of a force inside us, almost genetically sort of imprinted on us. You know, when you see a beautiful thing you want to buy, that's almost imprinted on you by the advertisement, by the psychology of where these things are placed in the shop front. There's so much of life, even getting angry. Sometimes that's part of the nature of the human being. But even though that will is almost imprinted on us, natural, comes up because of hormones and goodness knows what else, that you can't just totally obliterate. It's there, it's real. But what you can do is always to have the free won't. I won't eat that extra bit of chocolate cake. I won't sort of go talking to that beautiful secretary, even though, you know, my wife doesn't know. I won't sort of watch that porn movie. That you have power to do. And I won't keep thinking, you know, all those bad thoughts of longing for that person who's passed away. You can stop the grief. You can stop the anger. And when you do that, you find you are free of the anger. You are free from the grief. You are free from that addiction of having to take the extra bit of chocolate cake. It gives you freedom. And that is why when people say free will, it's the oxymoron. The will controls you. The won't gives you the freedom. And it is the won't which gives you the opportunity. Yeah, if you like the chocolate cake, you can have it, but you don't have to have it. You can always say no. And I think in our modern world, that's one of our big problems. We haven't learned how to say no. We haven't learned how to just to be aware of the whole process and just interrupt it. So we don't get controlled by advertising. We don't get controlled by our hormones. We don't even get controlled by our culture. Even though everyone else says, yeah, you should be feeling sad that your father's died. No, you can say no to that. You can look at it a different way. It gives you freedom. And that's the whole point of this path. When you're meditating early, I often ask you, do you feel free? Do you feel free? And the times you feel free the most is when this will has stopped. When you can just sit here and just be happy without wanting anything in the world. Have you not noticed that some of the happiest moments of your life, if you look back upon them, I often ask people to do this, when were you the most happiest? you'll find that when you were content, in other words, you didn't want anything else, the person you were with, the place you were at that moment was just totally satisfying. Those moments, you could have been with a partner, you could have been in some holiday resort somewhere, you could be just, you know, on the beach at Scarborough, just watching the sunset, or in some meditation retreat. And you had these beautiful moments. At this moment right now, I don't want to be anywhere else in the whole world, just here. You notice that those happy moments are when the will has stopped. Well, you don't want anything. You are content. Which is why in Buddhism we say, yeah, we have to have will, we have to have wanting to get things done in this life, but we have also to learn how to say no and be free from the will. Because those moments of freedom, those moments of contentment are the best in the world. They are literally the taste of freedom. No wanting, happy to be here. Saying no gives you the freedom. So that's what I mean. Free will, fate. No, there's the other option. Free won't. Thank you. Okay, some questions, if you will, or if you won't, whichever way. Okay, first of all, the questions from overseas. Here we go. Da, da, da. From Germany and from Italy, so it's Europe tonight. Concerning mindfulness, advertisement, etc., is there a mental exercise you could suggest to practice mindfulness when you are walking to, like, for example, the supermarket, or just going for a walk? Okay, when you are going for a walk, please be aware of where you're walking. Don't just be in your head and thinking about just where you're supposed to be, or what's happening in your head. Because so many people are so into their head. They think. And they just don't realize that they're just going into a manhole or into the bush or something. So remember, when you're walking, please be aware of where you're walking, but also have some of your awareness in just what's happening in your head as well, especially just, you know, what do you want? That's one of the things which I ask people when they're meditating to reflect on. Always ask themselves, what do I want? What do I want? What do I want? When you become aware of that wanting, you can realize just what a great, how that controls you so much. And how you want things, and even though they're going to cause you a lot of trouble, you know, you just can't get rid of them. You don't learn how to say no. So that if you're in the supermarket, sometimes you see something, oh, I want that, I want that. And it's not just you guys as well. Monks, we don't go into supermarkets. Monks go into Bunnings. And they think, you know, guys, okay. You know, this is like a guy's supermarket, Bunnings. They say, oh, you know, we can do with a hammer. Oh, look at that new chainsaw. We could really use that in monastery. So that's, I've got to tell the monks to say no when you go into the Bunnings shop. Because, you know, they give us these credit cards. These not credit cards. We've got a Bunnings card, a trade card, so it just goes on a bill. And that gets to our, where's Pauline go? That goes to our treasurer at the end of the month. She's really, really good. She doesn't ever question anything, thank goodness. All the stuff we've got in there for Bunnings. But anyway, so you have to say no sometimes when you walk into the supermarket. So be aware of your will. And don't just what I want, but do I really need that? Well, sometimes you don't need it. And you feel so free when you go through a shop, you don't need it. And no one can make you buy it. It's a great sense of freedom that way. So that be aware of the wants in there. And that means the advertisements, you know, they can't really control you. Because it's the advertisements, they control the wanting. They actually put the message in there that, you know, you can't be an attractive guy unless you get some Bruno tobacco. Or, you know, sometimes I see these, you know, in the airports. about, you know, you have to have a big, fast, red car to get a beautiful girl sitting next to you. You don't need that. You can get many beautiful girls on the bus. I get on the bus, for goodness sake. Or you need a really sharp suit or whatever. To do that, especially for young men and young women. You know, a few times I've got these, you know, youth groups, you know, 15 to 25-year-olds. Sit them down, and they wanted to talk on Buddhism. I said, okay, girls outside, boys outside. Gays in the middle, I don't know. Whatever, but, you know, just girls and boys, first of all, because that's the majority. And to say, right, girls, now, you guys just listen. What do you like in a boy? What type of boy would you like to go out with? You know, these boys, it's the first time they've ever heard that, and they really pay full attention. Because I remember as a young boy myself, you know, you're supposed to go out with girls. No one told you what you're supposed to do. Now, are you supposed to, you know, dress up in expensive suits or be the tough guy, get your green velvet trousers and big motorbike? Is that, you know, or some Bruno tobacco? Is that how you're going to attract somebody? And you believe all that rubbish. But, you know, boys, find out from the experts, the girls, what do you like in boys? And it's incredible. They were, you know, these were, I think it was in, I've done this over here, done this in Kuala Lumpur and many other places. They just, you know, they don't need to actually wear expensive clothes. They don't need to be like tough guys. So trustworthy, I remember, kind, you know, good fun to be with. So that was really important. And then, okay, girls, shut up. Boys, what do you like in a girl? Does she have to wear lots of makeup and really good hairstyle, expensive, you know, designer clothes? No. As long as, you know, she's got to be reasonably attractive, but as long as she's kind, trustworthy. So fun to be with. It's exactly the same, they were saying. And to these boys and girls, they were saying, thank goodness that at last we know what we're supposed to do to make ourselves attractive. Because when we look at the advertisements, you know, we feel we've got to be like Bruce Willis, you know, to get the girls. Or, you know, you've got to sort of be, you know, drop-dead gorgeous, you know, like Taylor Swift. I saw in his face. Is that right? Is she gorgeous? Is that who you like? That's the only way you can get... And so these poor girls, they spend so much money in just getting their face relifted, boobs put up or whatever. Why do you do that? Because, you know, you're advertising, that's what you have to do. But you don't. So, well, when you realize that, you feel so free. You are free from this advertising world, which always thinks you can only be happy if you buy more. You don't. That's why, you know, look at the monks and the nuns, which, you know, we're really happy people. You know, the nuns haven't had boob jobs. The monks, you know, we don't ride big motorbikes. So when you actually start doing it, you realize that, you know, some of these advertisements, they're just being stupid. So this is actually when you actually really understand what's going on and you use wisdom and you can actually say no. And that gives you so much freedom. I don't have to have these things. Now, there's a few people, they're amazing, they don't have TVs at home. What, you don't have a TV at home? You have to have a TV at home. So why? And they say no. And they spend time talking to each other instead. But you look on the TV, it says get another TV, get one in every room. Crikey, you can't escape from it. Anyway, that's what happened. Anyway, concerning experiment by Professor Libet, this is from Italy. He said the brain decides to lift the arm before our mind is aware of it. However, Buddhism teaches that volitions are not caused by biological processes in the physical brain, otherwise there would be no rebirth. So how can this be reconciled method of monitoring the brain to reveal what our volitions are? Okay, those volitions are there, you know, in our brain, but actually, did actually start from the brain? What actually turns on the brain? Because I never actually got part of that. And again, those volitions which first come in, you know, some of them are caused by your body, you know, the hormone things, the, you know, PMS, you know, postmenstrual syndrome. You don't blame girls for this or guys for it, it's just part of the body when it gets old. Now, just like sickness in the body, sometimes when you see, go and see somebody who's really sick, they get very grumpy and angry. It's the sickness talking. So there is actually some influence on the physical body, on the will. You can actually see that happening. But also, you've got something, another level, which is the mind influencing the brain, which then actually starts the will. So yeah, there is something called volition, but what most people look upon as volition is not what starts the process. And that actual volition is actually the cause. A lot of it, in said my, so the conditioning, by culture, by advertising, by peer pressure, this makes you do what you want to do. What you want to do, you think you want to do it, but you don't want to do it, you've been conditioned. I wasn't going to bring up this one, but here we go. This was the time in Cambridge, Psychic Research Society. Every year we get a hypnotist to come up to teach us a little bit about hypnotism. And being students, everybody was willing to give it a try. I went up there, but I was not a good hypnotic subject at the time. But there's always a few of the students were really, really easy to hypnotize, and they do make them do silly things, which, you know, being, you know, undergraduates, 18, 19 years of age, was great entertainment. But what they did to this one poor student, put him totally in hypnotic trance, and after he was in trance, the hypnotist said, "When I touch my right earlobe, you'll get up and sing the British National Anthem in full, loud voice." And then he said, "I'm going to take you out of trance now, but you remember that instruction." And so he took him out of the trance, and he went back to sit in his seat, and we were waiting to see what would happen. Of course, eventually the hypnotist touched his right earlobe, and this young man in the middle of a 300 students, like 300 of you, you imagine you just suddenly get up and sing the Australian National Anthem in full. What an idiotic thing that would be to do. But this guy did it. He sang the British National Anthem beginning to end in a loud voice. Even all the students were howling with laughter. You know, it was the most funniest thing I'd seen. And when he'd finished, he sat down, and we'd all sort of settled down as well. This fellow was not embarrassed at all. And so the hypnotist asked him, he said, "Why did you decide to sing the British National Anthem?" And this student, he gave a logical reason. And that was when I realized that that student, he had assumed he had sung that anthem out of his own free will. There's no way that he could distinguish between what was a hypnotic suggestion, what we all seen he was conditioned to do that, and what he took to be free will. It wasn't free will. That was implanted into him by the hypnotist. Even though it's the most ridiculous thing to do. And so sometimes, why do you know where fashion items like high heels, which kill your feet, is conditioned into you by hypnotists called advertisers? And you think you have a choice. Just like that fellow thought he had a choice to sing the British National Anthem. You don't have the choice. Or rather, you do have a choice to say no. That will comes up. And if you're sharp enough, you can say no. So that whole idea of volitions forcing you to, you know, to will to do things, because we don't know how to say no, it is that is forces this stream, what we call the stream of consciousness, into future lives. Basically, you know, you get reborn because you want to. Why do you want to? Because you're conditioned to want to. You don't know how to say no and stop the whole cycle. Now, how many of you can stop thinking when you're meditating? So you can see, you try to, you don't want to think, but it's this automatic process. You don't say no. And that's why you keep getting reborn. You don't know how to say no to stop. But with more practice, more mindfulness, you can say no to things. Interrupt the volition and say no. That's called letting go. That's called renunciation. Saying no to things. And that is actually how rebirth happens. Okay, so there we go. I don't know if I answered your questions properly, but it's very hard to answer question 1-1 because it's nice actually to talk to people face to face, and you get much more information to answer the questions properly. So hopefully you enjoy it this evening, and hopefully you learned a little bit. If not, you learn how the Wall Street works with everybody following each other rather than actually stopping and thinking for themselves. Thank you for listening. Now we can pay respects to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and then we can actually go and do what we need to do.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.
Very good.
Very good, that will do. Okay.
Very good. Very good.
Okay, I'm going to stay here for a little bit. Good time to go back while you can stay.